Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, a show for marketers by marketers to talk shop and share insights on the ever-changing landscape of the digital world. My name is Katya, and I am your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. In every episode, we aim to help marketers maximize their potential by getting real with industry experts across multiple industries and disciplines. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy, we talk through it all and leave you with actionable tips to help you in the day-to-day of marketing. Now today, I'm joined by Aliza Freud, founder and CEO of She Speaks. Aliza is on a mission to amplify the voice of women as entrepreneurs, consumers, leaders, and as a community. As the founder and CEO of She Speaks, Inc., she has built the largest, most diverse community of female consumers and influencers in America with a network reach of more than 300 million people per month and growing. No one has a better purview of women's real-time attitudes and preferences. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for our guest, Aliza Freud. Well, Aliza, thank you so much for joining the Grin Gets Real podcast. I'm excited to get you on here. And today we're going to be talking about just kind of the evolution of sharing the customer experience. I would love for you to get started by sharing with the audience a little bit about yourself and kind of your background and expertise in this.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. My background is I've really only worked two places my entire career. You'd think that I was a spring chicken and that I was, you know, very young, but I've been out in the working world for a while since the later 90s, but I really only worked two places. The first part of my career, I worked at American Express doing all kinds of marketing and branding. I managed a portfolio of credit cards and, you know, really kind of took the tour around the marketing departments at American Express. Great place to learn marketing. You know, it's one of the world's most respected brands. It has been for many years. And I have to say, it was wonderful training ground. And I loved that. And then I decided I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So, and marketing has always been the thing that was interesting to me and understanding what was going on in the customers' minds and what was, you know, what motivated them. So I started my company, She Speaks, which was really started as a platform to help brands better understand what was going on in the hearts and minds of women. So today we've evolved a bit. That's where we started where I started. And then the company was founded as a research company, but we've now evolved to doing more marketing in addition to the research and insights.
I love it. You know, you say it's only really been two places, but I think it's the depth and breadth of knowledge that you've gained from those is what I'm so excited to talk to you about. You know, in our previous conversations, we were talking about just being able to share the customer experience. And because you went from Amex to where you're at now, and like you said, you started in the 90s. And let's be honest, you know, I was around in the 90s. Social media was not what it is today. Actually, it wasn't even there. I don't want to bring everybody back, but pagers were a big deal in my life at some point, and that was revolutionary. So I'd love to hear about how you shared the customer experience back in Amex. And then like before the social media explosion, how did people share those customer experience stories? And what were like the big vast changes in that process of sharing the customer experience because of the explosion of social media?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that back then, one of the things that I love the most about getting to work at a place like American Express is, especially on the brand side, you don't always get, in fact, a lot of brand managers don't get that front row seat with the customer, unless you're going to go like hang out in the aisle of the supermarket, let's say, if you're a brand manager on Coca-Cola, right? Mm-hmm. Your feedback, your interactions with the customers are pretty limited. For every company, you have different types of customers. But for me, what fascinated me was the end user, the person who actually used the American Express card. And what did they use it for? Why? Like, what did it do for them? And what I loved about being at a place like American Express is that we had a front row seat to talking with customers because I could see in any given month, you could see where people were shopping, what they were buying, what it was for, and you could really analyze that, which is kind of cool. And then in addition, we had customer service, which back then, I mean, I don't know that anyone really thought of it as like, in some ways, it's kind of like social media because social media functions as a way for people to kind of tell you what they think about your products now, if you're a brand. But back then, people could dial an 800 number and tell us exactly what they thought of their American Express card and their experience with American Express. So it was a wonderful way to understand the customer and what they were happy with, what product features they liked, what they didn't like, what they wanted more of and less of. So that customer experience was so clear if you just sat for 2 hours listening to those calls. And I loved doing that. So that's really what my entree into understanding the customer kind of came from that. And then when I shifted to doing what I do now, what I recognized was, wow, this social media thing is, if you think about what people used to be able to call into American Express and tell us, this is now a way they could just do it online. I mean, anybody can kind of tell us, what do they think? Oh, wait a second. And everyone else is going to see it. It's not just us that they're telling, right? I mean, that was a huge shift. That shift of like, okay, well, if they call customer service, then we know, and maybe they tell 10 of their friends. But at the end of the day, with social media, what happened was a customer experience became something that you could tell thousands upon thousands of people at any given moment. And I think that's why it has really evolved the way that brands make their products and they think about brand reputation and all of that. And it's been a really cool thing to see because it does put more power to the customer, right? The customer has a lot more power than they used to.
Yeah, I was going to say, to me, it's like a double-edged sword, right? That's great. They can share their experience, but they're going to share that experience, good or bad. And as a marketer, like, you're always having to kind of combat that, I think, a little bit more, right? You have to have almost like a broader crisis plan in place. I don't know if you feel that same way too.
For sure. And I'll tell you something that was interesting. Back in the day when I was at American Express, we used to say that if a card member had a good experience with your brand, with us, they were likely to tell 3 people about it. If a card member had a bad experience with your brand, they were likely to tell 10 people about it. So if you think about just that ratio of, if you have a good experience, you're going to tell about 3 people about it, right? Because you're happy and you're going to tell them. But it's really when you have a bad experience that's when you crank it up and you tell a lot more people about it. And I think that initially, with social media, you started hearing more and more about those bad experiences. I think that's what was really dialed up. But over time, I think brands have gotten much better at really kind of trying to tap into their customers and thinking about their programs, to their social media programs, to get people to share positive experiences and not just the negative experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that in walks influencer marketing, right? And influencers, right? Like, brands are looking for the extension of like the positive. How can I get my brand story out on the positive and not just rely on the people that are either going to take the time to speak out? Let me ask them, like, what do you think? So what are your thoughts on? Because I know that when we had initially talked as well too, you were like, you know, I was doing influencer marketing at MX before it was called influencer marketing. So I'd love to hear a little bit about what that looked like, especially with a credit card company, because right now I think that leveraging the voice of customers or influencers, it's easy to conceptualize and it's tangible if it's like a fashion brand, right? Or if it's a beauty brand, if it's something that it's tangible, but like with a credit card, what does that look like?
Yeah. So, well, at Amex, and this was, I have to give credit to the last person when I was at American Express, I reported into the chief marketing officer at the time is John Hayes. He was the chief marketing officer at Amex for a very long time. And one of the things that he understood very quickly about social media was, well, if we know that when somebody has a good experience with us, they're likely to tell a bunch of people about it. If you could sort of figure out how to do that at scale, mm-hmm. that is hugely powerful, right? If you could even mobilize a relatively small number of people in terms of how many people. Like, you don't have to get every card. I mean, American Express has many, many millions of customers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But even if you got a relatively small percentage of those people that you could mobilize into and give them an easy way to share positive experiences, then wow, that could be hugely powerful. That was the starting of us thinking about ambassadors and how do we get our card members, when they are happy with us and think and they've had a good experience, to be able to share that. So we started working on these programs that some of it relied on technology. Other of it was, like, as you might imagine with any big company, it was just putting into place some processes,
yeah,
operationalizing it. How do we take people who have good experiences with us and give them easy to use tools so that they can share that in a much bigger way with an audience? And yeah, if you think about it, it was kind of influencer marketing before anyone called them influencers. Anyone called these people influencers.
I absolutely agree. And I think that it's interesting too, because brands have to not just look for that, they have to actually create good customer experiences for people to be able to talk about. Do you think that there has been more of a challenge or more of a push to, like, because of this, like, influx of sharing, like, this word of mouth and the sharing the customer experience, do you think that brands are now, like, really held to, like, no, the expectation of a consumer is I'm going to have a phenomenal customer experience, because if not, I've got a lot of people to tell. Do you think that brands are feeling that kind of pressure?
Oh yeah, no question. And I think that on the downside for brands, right, now everyone has a megaphone. And you don't even have to be somebody who has an enormous following. You could share something on social that other people decide to pick up on, and then lots of people see it, right? It isn't just about me as an individual who maybe has 100 followers, let's say. It's that somebody else can pick that up, right? Using the right hashtag, using the right at, other people can pick that up. And so something can go pretty viral,
yeah,
even from somebody who doesn't have a huge following. And I think that's scary. If you're a brand, that is scary, right? At the end of the day, what's that old adage? The customer's always right.
Yeah.
Even if the customer's wrong, the customer's right. And that's existed for many years. But because of social media, the customer has a way bigger voice and a much bigger megaphone,
yeah,
than they did before. So the downside is when they have a bad experience or they think that something negative has happened, the perception of something negative has happened, they can get on social media and say something. So that, I think, absolutely has held a brand's feet to the fire. Companies, their feet are held to the fire for that. And that is, if you're a customer, if you're someone who's the consumer and you're buying the product, it's a good thing, right? Because it's going to push the brands, the companies, to make sure that their products, their experiences are good, and that they,
yeah,
you know, have fewer flaws than maybe they did in the past. So I think there's a downside for brands there, right? That we just talked about. There's an upside for customers. But I also think there's an upside for brands with this. And I think the smart brands have and will continue to use what they're hearing from people as a source for insight. And then how do we make things better?
Yes, I love that. I think that that's also that power, not just from customers, but also from influencers as well too. Like, it's more than just a post. It's more than just something positive. They can really help drive the direction of your product and make it even better. All you have to do is be able to ask them. I did have an additional question, just kind of what we were talking about, like, you know, sharing those good experiences and sharing the negative experiences, right? Do you have thoughts on the trolls out there? Those people that are just saying something to say something, like, from a brand perspective, because I come from the school of thought of, and I'm also a silver lining person. So yeah. I feel like there's value to everything. So if you, yeah, give me a negative review, okay, I'm going to take this opportunity to show you that I can respond, and then show you how, like, in that response, I can say, okay, we didn't hit it here. So sorry, but our tool is meant for XYZ, right? Like, let me give that positive spin. So anybody who's reading that negative can also hear how I respond, and then what a potential, like, added value we can have even within a negative review. But do you have thoughts on like how we can control the trolls? Do we leave them alone? Do we respond to them? Like, do we ignore them?
Oh, well, it's a great question. And I think, you know, it's interesting because I was just thinking about when you brought that up, how what's also evolved in the role of the marketing within the brands working on these products and services is that we've all almost had to become crisis managers, right? You have to understand what to do and what to say. If you think about the fact that consumers now have these opportunities to say whatever they feel, right, on social media, and that other people will hear it or can hear it, it's out there in the public domain. What that means, if you think about it, is that's traditionally something that like someone in PR or in crisis communications, what they deal with. It's unexpected media, right? If you think about pre-social media, it happened in the days where, you know, a magazine or a newspaper decides they're going to cover, they unearth something and they're going to go cover it. And usually you get like a heads up because they're contacting you for a comment, right? If you think about where we are, what now in today's day and age, it's become almost like one of the core skills you have to have is how do I deal with an unexpected piece of media?
Yeah.
How do I undeal? And that is a huge skill set that's developing. I think, you know, a lot of the brand people and the marketers that I work with day in, day out, they are way more skilled in this than prior generations, let's say, of those same marketing and branding people, because they had to be. So with that said, I do think that there is something about having that knowledge of, okay, at any moment, somebody can say whatever positive or negative they want about my product, how am I going to react to it? And I think that's where, in some instances, when you talk about like a troll, like there's some people that you're never going to satisfy and they are there because they want to say something. What I will say that I think works really well, because we have talked to a lot of different brands about this, influencer marketing can help significantly in this area, because let's say you do have people kind of coming out and saying negative things. If you had people who genuinely care about your brand advocates, your brand ambassadors who like your brand, you are way better off having them engage in a conversation or share their own, even if they're not responding directly to a troll, let's say, but they're just pushing out their own positive perspective about your brand. That helps to equalize a lot of what you might be hearing on the negative side. And that, I think, is where you're seeing a lot of brands move to. They are realizing it's one thing if American Express comes out and says, wait a second, that's not correct. That's not true. Let us teach you what is correct. That has a very different tone than somebody who's a true advocate, let's say a customer, but a true advocate for your brand who says, look, this has been my experience. Even if they don't engage directly with the person to say, it's not the case for me or whatever.
Yeah.
If they come out and they say, hey, this has been the really great experience that I've had with the brand, that is a great way to neutralize a lot of the negative. Assuming that we're talking about people who are trolling, who are just saying negative things for the sake of saying negative things.
Absolutely.
If you have a problem with your product, though, you got to fix it.
Nothing.
It's not going to go away.
There is nothing that influencer marketing, any type of marketing, can help if you don't, you know, have a good product and then also execute a high level of a customer, you know, service or provide a good customer experience.
Amen.
I do. I know. Like, let's moment of silence. No, just kidding.
it's true.
It absolutely is. And I think that that's what I'm always really focused on. Like, we can only do so much. We're only in control of so much. I love the idea, though, of neutralizing that negative, because you're right. If I've got 10 advocates, whether they're responding or not, to your point, if I've got 10 advocates just over here on this side talking about how great it is, it puts out this fire over here on this other end. Like, okay, this is now like If it's 10 people overall, that's one in 10. I'm going with the 9 people who had a really great experience. Yes. I mean, maybe this person was just having a bad day or they're just not a nice person.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which, look, this is the world of digital, right? It's much yes. easier for someone. And we have found this in a lot of the research that we've done, that people are much more likely to say something negative online, typing it, versus directly to you and in any forum. And that is one of the truths, though, of the digital world we live in. You're going to get more negative feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about what it was like then, and you'll have to excuse me because I don't want to make it seem like you are ancient, because you are not. I believe though that trajectory of digital that has happened in such a short amount of time, and so much has happened in that time that we've talked about just kind of some of the challenges, you know, between just kind of the trolls and, you know, a higher pressure on brands creating good customer experiences. What kind of other challenges do you think in this kind of evolution are marketers kind of combating when it comes to that?
So, I think it's a lot more challenging in some ways, right? If you think about how media was bought back in the day, there were a handful of television stations, let's say, that mm-hmm. That had large audiences, very large audiences. And you could, let's say, buy media against the people that would be tuning into whatever the show was that you're going to be advertising on. The proliferation of just that medium, right? That the streaming services, all of that. What it's done is it's taken a few easy places, relatively easy to identify, and made them. There are just tons of them, right? And how yeah. do you just, if you, so again, if you just think about media buying, right? And how much more complex something like, how do I find, I think of media buying as, okay, where is the attention? Like, where is attention? Where am I going to find the people who are relevant for me to put my message in front of them? Now, having said that it's more complicated in the sense that it's not like I'm not going to choose, like I don't have just 3 choices and whatever, but it's also a lot more effective. And another thing that they've said for many years in advertising is, I know that I'm wasting half of my advertising budget if only I knew which half I was wasting. Now, in today's world, you actually have a much better sense, right?
Yeah.
That is the benefit. So it's, yes, it's more complex. But you also know, okay, where am I getting the better result? And am I actually going after my people,
yeah.
right? The people who I really want to speak to. Before, I was not really able to be as hyper-focused and targeted on who I want to go after or who I really want to go after, because the demographics were too broad in terms of how you bought media. Today, it's so much more specific. And, you know, that has been one of the benefits of the world we live in today, is that you're able to be a lot more specific about who you want to go after. And you can also see the efficacy in a way that you were not able to see before.
That's true. When you said that, it made me think of billboards. Like, there was a time where people just wanted the freeway billboards, but there's no way that you can attribute any sale back to like that sign on 80, you know, or like 99 or whatever freeway, you know, that billboard is part of. But that was like so part of it. Having a commercial was like an essential strategy as part of that.
Yeah.
And I really like what you said about the just kind of proliferation of media buying that is kind of at our fingertips. But what kind of advice would you give then to a marketer now on how they can find, where is the right place that my audience is at? Like, where should I be? Should I be a part of all of them? I mean, like, I for one am a big believer that if you're stretching yourself too thin, then nobody's really listening, because you also do have to have a strong voice. You can't just mm-hmm. be everywhere. You have to have a strong voice in the areas that you have selected to be. But any advice on like, how do I narrow down where I go, or what I pull for my strategy? Like, is it paid? Do I have to just have a kick-ass website? Should I do commercials and radio as well too? Because maybe that's coming back too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the short answer is it depends really on what your resources are. And I don't mean just money. I also mean like, who do you have decked against testing this? Because in an ideal world, what you want to do is test, and not even ideal. Like even if you're a startup, right? You want to test into what works best for you. If you are a company that has a, you know, smaller resources, both budget as well as team, I think you have to pick some things that you think make sense for you and place some bets, because you can't boil the ocean, yeah. Right? That the benefit of being a big brand with big budgets is you have a little bit more ability to test into a lot of things and see what works. And, oh, well, this didn't work, but this other thing worked. And you have more runway in terms of trying to figure out what's right and what works and what's not working as well for you. So I think that that's the big question for a company is, what are your resources? If you have more limited resources, or you have to get a result pretty quickly, then be smart and pick a couple of things that make sense, that you think make sense, and place some bets. And then you'll still be able to learn, because that's the thing. If you, in as I've said before, in today's day and age, we have much better ways to measure everything that we're testing into. And that's one of the benefits of the way that marketing functions today. You really do have a lot more insight into what's working, what's actually working for you, and what is not working for you.
Yeah, definitely. Making data-informed decisions on where you or what dictates your strategy from a marketing perspective as well too. I can dig that. I also really like that you said testing, because I almost feel like that's something that we don't talk about a ton when it comes to marketing. I think that the conversations are starting to happen a little bit more and more now, but it is like, it's always be testing something out, because you don't know what like that next thing is. And especially because digital changes so much, right?
Yes.
Digital changes so much that if you're not trying the new hotness, at least to know what it can do for you, when it's time to like make a move, like you can make it faster if you've already tested, and it can be more effective in the long run. Ugh.
I mean, it's such a good point, Katya, because you're right. The digital is moving so quickly, and the social platforms are changing so quickly, right?
Yes.
The second you understand the way one thing works, it's not as effective anymore. I mean, I'm a big believer in you need to follow where the attention is. At the end of the day, if you're a brand and you're marketing a product or service, you've got to figure out where your customer is, you know, and that shifts, right? If somebody told you that TikTok would be the platform.
I was just going to say TikTok.
Yes. Right? I mean,
yeah.
it was Musical.ly, right, before.
Yep.
And I remember we did a campaign for CoverGirl. For Katy Perry had a line of cosmetics that CoverGirl was doing. And this was, back maybe in 2016, I want to say, we did this thing on Musical.ly. And it was like, oh, it's for people who want music. It's like a very different audience. And we tested it and it did well for the audience it was trying to reach. But if you had said to me, this is the next platform that everyone is going to be on, I would have said, no way. This is a very specific group of people that are on here. They want very specific stuff. But the platforms evolve, right? And COVID totally accelerated people's adoption of that platform. And now look at it. Now, I mean, just the engagement rates are off the chart. I mean, it's kind of unparalleled versus the other platforms right now.
Oh my gosh. TikTok is the case study of digital marketing. I feel like, look at what happened, and look at also even in the time since the pandemic that it's involved, not just in the popularity, but the type of content that's in there as well too. Because I remember just in 2019, someone saying like, oh, it's a bunch of videos. And I'm like, why would I want to download another social network? I'm just kind of not into that. And now literally it is my downtime. I'm like, let me scroll through it. I love to be entertained. It's entertaining. And I don't know if you've heard this one, well, I'm sure you have. It's like the TikTok University. Now I can learn so much from TikTok. That's where all my tricks and my hacks are, right? Like, and now I'm thinking from a business perspective, what kind of tips and tricks can I put on TikTok? TikTok. There you go. See, now I've shown my age for sure. TikTok people, it's the next big thing. Exactly. We'll leave everybody else on TikTok. But yeah, I mean, like now it's got me thinking from a brand perspective, like, oh, how can I get into this TikTok university and share my story in that way and be able to reach like the masses using that? So I think it's, gosh, such a great example.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we're down to prediction time. I know we've talked a lot about all of the things, and with digital marketing changing so much, so rapidly all the time, I'd love to hear what you think could happen in the next 1 to 2 years when it comes to digital marketing. What kind of changes do you see?
I think the big thing is that I think we're going to get better and better information. I think the ability to analyze is going to get better. I think also some of the things that maybe weren't working as well, because of that, they're going to kind of fall away because we're going to see that they're not actually delivering. And, you know, it cannot be stressed that with the cookie, the stuff that's happening in terms of access to third-party data and the cookie, that is going to have an impact as well. I would like to think, I'm also somebody who has a healthy dose of concern for some of the things that are happening as it relates to social media. And we do have a whistleblower who's, as I'm sure you know, has testified recently in front of Congress from Facebook/Instagram. And she has really been bringing to light a lot of, I think, really important information as a mom of two teenage girls, knowing what these platforms know about what kind of negative impact it's having on our adolescents, on our teenagers.
Yeah.
I am hopeful that moving forward, we will start to see from a digital standpoint, we'll start to see less of the negative that is happening currently in terms of the impact it's having on mental health and some of the negative aspects, because we can dial some of that down and we'll dial up more of the positive, like, okay, we're going to get smarter about the tactics and the things that we do because there's more data, but we're also going to be not really exploiting these younger people and adults. It's not just it, but really the most vulnerable being the younger people.
Yeah, I can absolutely appreciate that prediction. And I think it's interesting too, because the first part of it is, you know, getting the data part of it so that you know what's working and what's not. And ironically, that second part of your prediction is moving away from the data and focusing more on the human to human, which is like such a missing piece in general, I think. So I think it's interesting that your prediction has both, right? Like, okay, I know it's working because the data tells me that. But now for this, I have to stop thinking about that and like look at the person, because there are people behind all of these digital platforms.
Yes, exactly. And there's precedent for it. Just to be clear, I mean, platforms like Pinterest, they've made conscious decisions to drive engagement in a different way than, let's say, some of the other platforms that the whistleblower talked about. So there are other ways to do it that still give you a great platform. I mean, I'm doing a kitchen remodel right now, and I will tell you, I'm all over Pinterest. And so it's an engaging platform. And I think what it shows is that there are ways that you can still be a really successful and engaging platform without doing things, without having practices that maybe are not strong for the mental health of the children of our country.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking all the time with me. I could talk to you for 45 more minutes. We'll talk about our dogs later too. It'll be a whole thing. Excellent. Thank you so much. And I hope to talk to you again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Katya.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Aliza as much as I did. It was great to talk through the evolution of sharing the customer experience. From billboards to TikTok, we really dove into how digital has given every customer a megaphone to share the good and the bad experiences. Those brands that thought ahead and are really leaning into the amplification of the customer's voice have managed to stay in step with digital. Now, this change does not come without challenges. And as marketers, now we have to figure out how we find our audience amongst the sea of options. And then when we get there, how we stand out. Do you want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I say this all the time, but it's true. I wouldn't mind 5 of them. And leave us a review. Tell me what you love. If you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.